Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. I am Satchmo, joined by the one, the only, the Thin Man, DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations, Spartan Nation.
Oh, DB.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where do we begin?
Sadness. Sadness.
All right.
Melancholy.
Melancholy. Oh, well, all right. So let's be clear. There is melancholy about the Michigan State football team.
Yeah.
There's much melancholy. There's sadness. Yeah. There's melancholy. There's anger. Yeah. There's whatever you want to throw out there.
Every
right?
emotion other than joy.
Yes, every emotion other than joy. There's even a little pride thrown in because of the way Michigan State bounced back and made a run in a bowl game and all that sort of stuff. But there's no joy in Mudville. There is joy with the Michigan State basketball team.
Yeah.
And I won't say there's joy with the Michigan State hockey team, but there's hope.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not objectively horrible like they've been forever. So there's that. So there's hope there. There's, you know, potential for joy with the Michigan State basketball team. And there is melancholy with the football team. And so that's just sort of where we're at right now. But let's start with the football team and a 5-7 season that started off with much hope and ended with much despair. And I just want to walk people through what this football, just to give people, remind people, because we're going to give final grades, DB.
Yeah.
And so I just want to remind people. 35-13 win over Western Michigan. 52-0 win over Akron. Then a 39-28 loss over Washington. And this is where the wheels fell off. 34-7 loss to Minnesota. 27-13 loss to Maryland. 49-20 loss to Ohio State. Then a surprise win over Wisconsin.
Yeah.
By the way, DB, very bad themselves. A 29-7 drubbing at the hands of Michigan, followed by a tunnel incident, which we will get to.
Mm. Yes.
Oh, yes. The melee in the tunnel. Tunnel trouble. whatever you want to call it. And then Michigan State just rallied. They beat Illinois 23-15. They beat Rutgers 27-21. And they entered the Indiana game with a chance to win. And they were up, 14, 17 points in the second half?
Yeah.
And they lost in overtime 39-31. And then they lost to Penn State 35-16.
Right.
And finish below 500, not going to a bowl game, all of that good stuff.
Yep.
How are we feeling about this season, DB? Besides melancholy, are we feeling angry? Are we feeling resigned? Are we feeling, well, this is about what the roster deserves, and this is about what the coaching staff deserves, and, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I think it's kind of best in a way, just thinking about right now at this moment, that, you know, it's probably better that this team is not going to a bowl. I see no advantage to that at all. You know, it would be some fly-by-night bowl. And I think this team, whoever's coming back on this team, needs to just start the off-season regimen now. And the coaches need to recruit. And, you know, they're going to get one more clean shot next year and hopefully, I got to believe they're going to get it right. But right now, I don't feel sad. I think the air was sucked out of the balloon earlier in the season, right? When you talked about that Washington game. And the Washington loss, you know, we could have looked past that game if the Spartans had beaten Minnesota and Maryland. You know, then you're talking about, all right, so they lost to a good Washington team and we'll move on. But they didn't. It kept getting worse. And worse. And there were some moments where the Illinois win was a big surprise and a great win. But all in all, the season record sort of fit the way this team was.
So, yeah, I have many thoughts. One is, and I'll disagree with you a little bit on the bowl game. I think a bowl game would have been useful for Michigan State because it gives them another month of practices. And that's really what bowl games are about. Bowl games, everyone puts too much stock in where they play and who they play. None of that stuff matters. The only thing that matters is the 30 extra days of practice you get. That's it. And Michigan State's not getting them, and God knows they need them. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, looking back on last season to this season, it is almost impossible to understate how good Kenneth Walker III is. He was a generational talent, DB, that just papered over all the flaws that he saw this season. And he's made his mark in the NFL, and he's doing well with Seattle. And the fact that he did not win the Heisman, the fact that he didn't even travel to New York for the Heisman, DB, is just ridiculous. And this season proves how ridiculous it is. He should have won the Heisman last year, plain and simple. And there's no doubting that. The other interesting thing to me, DB, is that the decline of Michigan State started with the Xavier Henderson injury. Henderson goes down, and Michigan State starts struggling. Henderson comes back, and lo and behold, Michigan State starts looking a lot better. And it highlights something that you brought up earlier, which is this roster needs some turnover. It lacks depth. It's an issue. You got beyond the frontline players, and there wasn't enough there. Now, it looked like they started to develop some depth later in the season, but I also feel like against Indiana, they ran out of gas. And against Penn State, they were completely out of gas. And this is what happens when you have 8 suspensions from a tunnel melee and some key players that are involved in suspensions, that you don't have the depth behind it. And so I think you saw injuries early and a lack of depth throughout the season. And you put those two together. Don't worry, Spartan fan. We will get to the coaching. I know right now everyone's screaming, talk about the coaching, and we will. But there's no amount of coaching, DB, that can cover over the lack of depth of this team, and the lack of depth of this team was apparent. It's apparent on the offensive line, too.
Now, I do have an update on the bowl situation as we've taken the air.
Yes.
And we talked about this offline. And there's a outside chance.
Oh, hold on. Let me give you the breaking news.
This just is. The Spartan Avenue blog is reporting that, while not official, the UNLV football team fired its coach today. They also finished with a 5-7 record, just like MSU. And because of their academic standing, are in line ahead of MSU to accept the bowl bid. However, officials at UNLV are saying right now that they may not accept the bowl bid, depending on the coaching search. They may take their time. And if that's the case, and if they opt out, the next team in line for a bowl game is, in fact, Michigan State. So a decision will probably be made by the weekend because they have to. And so we'll see. I don't know what the bowl would be. It might be one of those, you know, mid-December bowls. But nonetheless, it does give you that practice time you're talking about.
Yes. That was your bowl breaking news brought to you by DB and sponsored by Papa John's.
I thought you were going to say quality dairy.
Oh, it's quality dairy. Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
The pizza commercial that just annoys the heck out of me the most right now is Little Caesars, you know, selling Detroit pizza from Detroit.
Yeah.
you had 50, 60 years to try to sell Detroit pizza to the rest of the country because you're from freaking Detroit. You wait till Detroit pizza becomes popular all over the country before, maybe it's a good idea if we put Detroit pizza on the menu.
Oh, jeez. My goodness gracious. Yeah.
and let's take it for just – let's take the pizza talk a step further, right? So New York pizza is not New York pizza. New York style pizza is not New York style. New York pizza is pizza. Now, after you have pizza, you have different varieties of pizza. You have deep dish pizza, which is from Chicago, and you have Detroit style pizza with the rectangular. I mean, just delicious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you got Neapolitan. Yeah. You got different styles of pizza, right? No. Detroit-style pizza is terrific. I mean, it's outstanding. And I'm glad the rest of the country's caught on. It's, you know, Satchmo was in the Detroit area for Thanksgiving, and they had a little Detroit-style pizza while he was there because that's what you do in Detroit. And let me tell you why. It was not Little Caesars. I mean, how bad is it for Red Wings fans that the only thing they can get is Little Caesars pizza?
Not to mention the arena's named after that.
Oh.
And the Pistons fans, too, now, come to think of it.
Yeah, Pistons fans, man. I mean, they got to eat cardboard when they get there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs with that. Yeah.
All right. So but back to Michigan State. The Michigan State roster needs some help. The offensive line was terrible for most of the year. It got better towards the end of the year. Michigan State had a gifted receiving corps, which they had a decent, not great, but a decent to good quarterback, who spent most of his time throwing off his back foot or running for his life or being planted into the ground. A running game that struggled to gain traction all because you've got offensive line issues. You had defensive line issues once the injuries hit. And you had coverage problems in the secondary, especially with Henderson out. This is – you need talent both sides of the ball, DB. And we'll get to the coaching, but the depth – just isn't there, and this is football. You're going to get injuries. You're going to get suspensions. You need depth that Michigan State's roster just doesn't have it.
Right.
So, all right. What do you want to do next? Do you want to do coaching, or do you want to do the Michigan tunnel incident?
Well, let's just stay on the team for a minute, maybe give them the grades, and then we'll get into that, but if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that's fine. All right.
Yeah.
I
could say real quick, though, in terms of the recruiting and, you know, that sort of thing, I think the place to really focus, especially in the transfer portal area, is not, you know, I mean, if you could come across a playmaker – on offense, great. You want to work in the trenches and build the heck out of the depth on the defensive and offensive line because, you know, when you look at the failures of the season, as you were saying, especially with the offensive line, that's right where it starts, and that's right where it's at. I would be focusing on that 100% in the offseason.
100%. And the other failure, which we didn't talk about, DB, is the field goal kicking unit.
Oh, God, that's inexcusable. Yes.
Yeah. We're going to put the grades off for a second here.
Right. Yeah.
We are, DB, field kicking, field goal you. Morton Anderson, Paul Edinger, who else? We've just had great kickers. I'm missing a lot of kickers. Michael Geiger.
Yeah.
I'm so mad I can't even think of all of our kicker names.
Yeah, no, there's a great many through the history of MSU football.
Yes, we've had terrific kickers. Mm. And this year, we've had kickers that can't kick extra points, that can't kick field goals. And I don't want to hear any of this nonsense about things being lined up on the wrong hash. It's a 22-yard field goal.
Yeah.
You want to know who can kick a 22-yard field goal from either hash mark, DB?
You.
Exactly.
That's
I could go out without warming up and do that right now. Right.
Well,
and
you might want to stretch
a
little.
The funny thing is, everyone's like, "Oh, he's crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about." Oh no! I do know what I'm talking about because I've kicked before.
Yeah. Yeah. Satchmo was Y.A. Tittle before there was a Y and an A.
And before there was an Ittle.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. You've got to be able to make extra points. You've got to be able to make short field goals. You've got to be able to make a 35-yard field goal. And the fact that Michigan State could not make a field goal, DB, had a direct influence on coaching decisions. They knew they had to go for it on fourth downs because they couldn't kick a field goal. They knew they had to
go for
touchdowns because they couldn't kick a field goal or an extra point. It completely wrecked game planning.
Yeah. Yeah, that is not how you want to go. You've got to have a kicker. You've got to have a reliable kicker. And we're not asking for your kicker to be making 50, 60-yarders, but we are asking them to make chip shots, anything inside 45. You've got to make them.
And if you take a look at some of the inexplicable play calling, part of it was just, all right, they knew they had two downs to play with to pick up the first down. Because they weren't going to kick the ball.
Right. Yeah, you can't live like that and win games.
It's even worse. When you can't kick the ball and you can't run for 1 yard, your options are limited.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To be fixed.
Yes.
Yeah. And if it's going to be fixed with the current roster, boy, those kids got to get in the weight room and get training tomorrow because I don't see it.
I don't think anyone sees it.
Yeah, I think, you know, to me it's a mixed bag of, you know, when you look at some of the kids on the roster, it's a mixed bag, especially in the offensive line, of younger players, D'Antonio holdovers and transfers. And it's just, there's no cohesion, and they're just not good.
No, well, that's the problem. They're just not good.
Yeah, and you got to really recruit that area or transfer portal those areas even more so than the talent positions. Certainly you need those, but, you know, the defensive and offensive line, like I said, damn it, get a kicker. I mean, if that kid's not working, then get him out of there and let's go. There's got to be a soccer player who can kick better than that.
There's one on the women's team. They won the Big Ten.
Yeah, let's do it. Get her in there.
Let's do it. Seriously.
Yes. No, I'm serious too. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah. If she can make field goals, let's go.
Yeah. This is just ridiculous. I mean, you talk about all the things that impacted Michigan State's season, not having a reliable kicking game or a reliable snapping game. And I know we had injury issues at the long snapper position. That had as big an impact as anything else this season.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just inexcusable stuff. Who's coaching the special team?
But it doesn't matter. Who's coaching is irrelevant. I mean, you put it down at the 22-yard line, or you put an extra point or a field goal, a 19-yard field goal attempt. It doesn't matter which hash mark it's from. You better make the freaking kick. It doesn't matter what kind of coaching you get.
So, yes, the kicker, yes. But the coaching comes into play with the snapping. That should be, like, constantly automatic practice. And it's inexcusable.
I mean, it's just awful.
Yes, it is awful. Yes. Now, on the other side of the coin, though, to be positive, damn good punter that we have, Bryce Perrin.
Yes.
Damn good. Saved their hides many times.
Yes. And he was a weapon. He was a definitive weapon. But let me tell you why. Let us not undersell the problems that the field goal game cost Michigan State this season. It cost 2 or 3 wins.
Yep. If you have a reliable kicker in, say, like the Washington game and the Maryland game, it's maybe a different story in those games. And the Indiana game as well. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about 3 wins right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And who knows how the play calling is different throughout the rest of the season. Not that the play calling was great anyway, but it's certainly easier calling plays, and it's certainly easier to manage the game when you've got a reliable kicking game.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this a lot, you know, earlier in the season, but when you don't have enough talent and you've got a bad offensive line and a bad kicker, you can't scheme your way out of crap. I mean, you know, it's not like you have Peyton Manning out there and you can do something, you know, like even Peyton Manning wouldn't have survived in the Spartan backfield with that offensive line.
Agreed.
Yeah.
100% agreed. All right. Let's go down. Let's talk about the coaches.
Yeah.
Then we can give grades. Let's talk about the coordinators first. Let's talk about the offensive coordinator, DP. How do we feel?
Well, if I'm giving a letter grade, they showed some life, you know, at different points at the end of the season in the Wisconsin game. So I'm not going to give an F. I'm not going to give an A. I'm probably falling like a C-, but I put an asterisk by that because you didn't have a breakaway running back or an offensive line or a really super year from Peyton Thorne to go with, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'd buy that. Look, they scored less than 20 points once. No, twice. Right?
Yeah.
They scored less than 20 points twice. They scored less than 20 against Maryland, and they scored less than 20 against Michigan.
That in Minnesota, right? Was it Minnesota 34-7?
And 34-7, so 3 times.
Yeah.
But, you know, They put up 34 against Wisconsin and 23 mm-hmm. against a good Illinois team, by the way.
Yeah.
Good Illinois defense. Yeah. 27 yeah. against Rutgers. Oh, they put up – I'm sorry, I missed the 16 against Michigan against Penn State. So,
yeah,
up and down on the offense. 31 against Indiana. This
still
was an offense
29,
that at times put
up 28 points. Against put up 28 against Washington still. You know, they weren't – I mean, if they had a field goal kicker, maybe they're closer into the game, you know.
Yeah.
And a defensive stop, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I do know. yeah, so you're giving them a C, basically, on offense.
Yeah.
You're giving the offensive coordinator a C.
Yeah.
I'm going to give the offensive coordinator a D+. And here's why. And so, first of all, they deserve credit for putting points on the board, right? And for the most part, they were able to get points on the board. Here's why they get the D+. First and foremost, it was clear to anyone watching Michigan State football that Elijah Collins was their best running back about halfway through the season.
Yeah.
And the absolute refusal to make him the starter or the featured back or the dominant ball carrier is just incredible. I mean, towards the end of the year, they started feeding him more regularly. But, man, he was outplaying everyone. And he earned it. And at the very least, he should have been getting goal line carries. If not more, and they just weren't feeding him the ball. And with an offensive line that was struggling, man, you needed a big, powerful guy to push the pile a little bit and pick some of the right holes and hit the cutback lanes and all that sort of stuff. Now, that's not to say the other Michigan State running backs were bad. I mean, they were good, but Collins was better, and he deserved more playing time, should have gotten more playing time in the coach. And the offensive coaching staff was really slow to respond to his improvement.
Right.
So that's first and foremost, and that's flat-out coaching. The second thing is that Michigan State insisted on running the setup to pass. And with this offense, DB, they should have been throwing the setup to run. You've got Reed, Coleman, and Mosley. You had Malik Carr and Daniel Barker at tight end. And, yeah, you're having trouble protecting, but you want to know what? You throw to set up the run. That's what this offense needed to do, and they didn't do it. And I understand. Look, Mel Tucker's philosophy and Jay Johnson's philosophy is balanced football, complementary football, equal run, equal pass, all of that good stuff. You want to know that's not the personnel you had. Wasn't
right.
The personnel you had. Can't do it. And I think part of it was Peyton Thorne injuries. Thorne started to get healthier towards the end of the season. You want to know what? He started to throw the ball better towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
A lot of factors involved, but it was a wasted year with three outstanding wideouts and two really good tight ends.
Yeah. Yep. Wasted indeed.
Had to throw to set up the run and didn't do it. And so I think those are two critical and costly errors. And then the other thing is, man, I mean, I think what was it, against Michigan, against a couple other schools? I mean, Keon Coleman was just torching people. And then defenses would make adjustments to take Coleman away. And the Michigan State offense was like, well, I don't know what to do next.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. I mean, part of it is they wanted to run the ball. That's what they wanted to do next, and they couldn't. But part of it is, all right, well, what's your plan B and C in terms of getting people open and throwing the ball?
Right. Right.
D plus to the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, DB, Hazleton.
Well, interesting. You know, a mixed bag, but many more issues on that side of the ball from the standpoint of injuries and suspension, and because we haven't gotten to that yet. But having said that, I can't be, you know, I have to keep that in mind when I'm assigning a grade. I also want to say that I think they, you know, with the depth challenge by the end of the year, you can see gradually in each game after the Illinois game, starting with Rutgers a little bit, and then Indiana, then Penn State, the defense of what they had was just taxed. But gosh, if you had told me that their defense could keep Michigan and Illinois out of the end zone that much, two of the better games that they played, I'm going to throw out Ohio State just because, you know, that just was a mismatch. But you might be surprised to hear me say this, but considering the circumstances, I actually raise it up to a B-.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm going to go with a gentleman C on this one.
Okay.
I was tempted with the C-. I'm going to go with a gentleman C, and here's why. Man, they kept that unit together after the suspensions.
Yeah.
That was a coaching job right there.
Yeah.
And they deserve a lot of credit for it. I mean, a lot. I mean, they came up with a great game against Illinois. They came up with an okay game versus Rutgers, and then they just ran out of gas. So they deserve a lot of credit for that. They also deserve credit, DB, for getting rid of their preferred, two linebacker, five defensive back thing and going more to a 4-3 line.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve a lot of credit. And so instead of playing a 4-2-5, going with a more standard 4-3, they deserve a ton of credit for that. They were making tactical adjustments. So that part is really good. The part that isn't good, DB, is go back to the beginning of the season. Even when Xavier Henderson was in the game, man, people were throwing left and right on him. They forced some turnovers in the first couple games that really covered up mistakes. But
yeah.
No, I mean, the last 2 years, they have not been able to stop people throwing on them.
No.
That's a big problem.
Yep.
They just can't. They've been unable to do it. They figured out how to stop the run, more or less. They've gotten better along the defensive line, but that secondary is porous. And so, yeah, gentlemen, see, I felt like there was some good stuff on the coaching side, but I felt like there's just some really bad stuff that's just been repetitive over the course of a couple of years. They tried to bend but don't break, but they broke too much. So then they had to get away from the bend but don't break. But, you know, I give them credit for, like, one of the complaints that most Spartan fans have is they don't make any adjustments. Well, they made a ton of adjustments. They just didn't work. It's not like they weren't trying new or different things. They were trying everything. Some of it worked against the run, but it didn't work quite as much against the pass. And it comes to personnel. Yeah. And Henderson was healthy. At least they were lined up in the right place, and that helped a lot. And when he wasn't, they really struggled. And, I mean, Henderson, he's gone, graduates. I shudder to think what this defense is going to be without Xavier Henderson, because they've shown, with the personnel that they have right now, they have shown a complete inability to play cohesive football without him on the defensive side.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be people either stepping up or, again, tapping that transfer portal until you can get a good batch of recruits in there. But I think focusing on the defense, too, is crucial.
Yeah. All right. We know what the field goal kicking unit is. That's enough. we know what the punting unit is. That's an A. So we can skip right over that. Let's talk about the head man Well, let's hold off on the head, man. Let's give the offense overall a grade. Well, we'll go down the receiver side. Let's start with the quarterback. What do we give the quarterback?
Well, you know, you talked about injuries, the thorn, uneven play, thrown off the back foot. I think, again, gentlemen C, not because I don't like Peyton Thorne. He gets a C for leadership. I think he's I think when he's healthy and he has a good offensive line and decent running back and he's got good receivers, he's an A. But he's a C this year with all the things and not all totally his fault.
Agreed. I think gentlemen C sounds about right. The wide receivers, DB.
Well, that might have been one of the better positions. I mean, we just didn't see them be able to do everything they could do, but, I mean, B+.
Yeah, I'll give them a B. There wasn't always a lot of separation, but, man, I mean, they were good. I mean, people couldn't guard Reed. They couldn't guard Coleman. Trey Mosley didn't get the ball enough. Wide receiver, B. Tight ends, I'm going to give a C just because they weren't used enough.
Yeah, yeah.
I almost want to give them an incomplete.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when you have a bad offensive line, your tight ends just get lost.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think B is fine. I mean, give them a B, maybe a B-. And then, you know, B. Offensive line, DB.
Oh, F.
F. Bad penalties.
Yeah.
Bad blocking.
Yeah.
Just
everything needs to start over again with the offensive line.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
And the running backs.
Well, I mean, I blame the coaches for this grade, but C-. I mean, like you said about, you know, Collins and just not using him enough and not, you know, there's no offensive line either. I mean, we couldn't see what we had there. Also, too, there was going to be a fall off either way when Kenneth Walker left, you know.
Yes.
He's an exceptional running back that comes along once every so often, and it was going to go down, but I didn't know it was going to go that far down. But again, I'm giving that C- sort of based on factors that are maybe outside of the control of the running backs.
Yeah, I think C or C- is fine. I'm fine with either grade. What a mess. All right, before we get to the head, man, let's do the defensive. Let's start with the defensive line.
I mean, B?
Yeah,
no pass rush?
Well, there was a pass rush sometimes, and other times there was, but I think B.
Inconsistent.
This was a defensive line that did well against the run. When they were healthy, they did better against the pass.
Yeah.
You know, Winman had his moments. He had injuries. I think B.
Yeah.
The linebacking crew.
You know, with Henderson there, I give him a B-.
Henderson's in the secondary. We'll get to Henderson there.
A lot of injuries in the middle crew. So I still give him a C+, B-.
Yeah, I think C+ sounds about right for the linebackers. The secondary.
Yeah. So Henderson there, but still, I mean, I guess he raises the grade to a C+.
I feel like I have to break Henderson out. Like, Henderson gets an A and everyone else gets a D.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Henderson will be playing on Sunday, as George used to say.
Yeah.
Henderson's going to be playing on Sunday. Yeah, he's going to get drafted. Yeah. And good for him.
Well, good for him. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, just ugly grades. We already gave the field goal an F and then the punt unit an A+. All right. Let's get to the head man, Mel Tucker.
Yeah. Well, so there's some things you can control as a coach, some things you can't. And so Mel Tucker didn't know he'd have all those injuries. Mel Tucker didn't know that his kicker and his snapper would have the yips all season. You know, but then there's some other things. Mel Tucker not using the right running back. Mel Tucker and the offensive coordinator maybe not thinking about things as well or having a good plan B or C based on the personnel.
Or not calling a timeout when you've got four offensive players lined up against three defensive players.
Yeah. Honestly, very disappointing. Mel Tucker, a very, very generous C-.
Did you give him a C-?
Yeah. Overall.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, I think he gets credit for keeping this team together.
Yeah.
And so I think he gets a lot of credit for that. He gets credit for the defense changing. I'm sure he was behind some of that.
Yeah.
But, man, two-minute drills were a problem. Ended game and timeout management, all of that sort of stuff. And I know Mel says he doesn't have any problems. You want to know what? Hire me as a consultant. You don't want to hire me. Hire someone else as a consultant. One of the interesting things that I think was the Baylor football coach did was he realized, he said, hey, I'm not really good at time management. Let me hire a consultant to do that. Not timing, but game management. So he brought on a consultant whose sole job is to make game management decisions.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea. So that's like when the Stephen Colbert show debuted, and Stephen Colbert was trying to do everything himself, and the ratings weren't working, and the show wasn't working at first, and somebody told him, you should hire a guy to sort of like manage everything else and you just focus on the comedy. And he's like, all right. And everything worked. And I think this is the same way. And, don't feel like it's like a knock against you. Bring somebody on like that. Consultants are always great.
Hey. Look, Ernst & Young will tell you consultants are great. PricewaterhouseCooper will tell you consultants are great.
if you can find a good one at Ernst & Young that can manage your game, then bring them in or her in. I don't care. Yeah. The more eyes, the merrier,
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, I think C- is about right. C- is just about right. All right. Let's talk about the tunnel incident.
Mm-hmm.
BB, you and I are no strangers to attempts to bury the news on days like Election Day or Thanksgiving Eve.
Mm-hmm.
We're not strangers to this because people have tried to do that to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work. In Washington, D.C. parlance, it's Take Out the Trash Friday, right?
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yep.
There's all sorts of stuff. Michigan State is well known for this, by the way. They once fired George Perlis on Election Day.
Yes, that's right. And it didn't work. That was before the internet.
It didn't work. It was before the internet. And one of the reasons it didn't work is I was in the damn press conference.
That's right.
I was anchoring election night coverage, left the radio station to cover this because all of our other reporters, including you, DB, were out on assignment.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work. But on the eve of Thanksgiving, we got word of, you know, the punishments. We got word that the prosecutor was pressing charges against many of these Michigan State players. One was charged with a felony. The rest were charged with misdemeanors. Didn't the whole prosecution thing seem odd to you? And I want to caveat this by saying the Michigan State players were 100% at fault, right?
Yes.
It doesn't matter that the Michigan players shouldn't have been there. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is you do not go beating up people and swinging your helmets at people and kicking and stomping at them.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense. All right. So 100%. I would have been okay with the helmet swinger being kicked off the team right away and never to come back. No investigation of it. All right?
Right.
So let's make this perfectly clear. This is not about apologizing for anything. But there are two issues I do want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So one is the issuing of misdemeanors to these folks for a tunnel brawl, I mean, just seemed weird, didn't it?
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
I mean, if you wanted to go after the helmet swinger, that's fine.
Yeah, yeah, that one's valid. Yeah.
But the rest, it was like, well, they're from East Lansing. They're Michigan State players. You know, I mean, these guys were suspended what was essentially the rest of the season. And normally that's the type of punishment that goes along with that. This was just bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of fault to throw around here. And I'm not, again, I want to say what you said. I am not excusing at all the Michigan State players' behavior. And I also want to throw in that where were their teammates and the coaches to break that up? Because
100%.
Going on. Yeah, somebody, especially the adults, the coaches, should have gotten their asses over there and pulled every one of those white jerseys away from that situation and got in the middle of it.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen.
Yeah, and look, I'm for all of those players being suspended for the entire season.
Yeah.
Right, so I was for any player involved being suspended the entire season. I was for the helmet swinger being kicked out of the program. Okay with all of that. I mean, to me, that just made perfect sense. And we'll get to one of the things that we're talking about there. But DB, I mean, this seemed like a rivalry prosecution, and not one that's normally rooted in fact and law.
Right. Right, exactly. And it also speaks to a larger problem. And I don't know if you saw what came out today with the fine that Michigan State got.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So Michigan State got the largest fine in Big Ten history.
Michigan State was fined $100,000.
Yeah.
And the Big Ten said members of both school share responsibility for what went down.
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a moment because that needs exploring. But go ahead, make your point.
Well, I mean, I think I'm trying to be careful here. I'm not blaming, as much as I cannot stand the University of Michigan, I'm not blaming those two U of M players for getting hit like that.
Nope.
What I am blaming, though, is that And my dad, who is a big U of M fan, wanted to know, what were those two Michigan players doing there? And so this goes to, and this is not the first time this has happened, and the whole setting and the whole structure makes me angry because, first of all, ESPN and ABC and all these networks put cameras in the tunnels now for this exact kind of thing. I don't even understand why that is the case. It never used to be the case, but I think they're waiting for something to happen. And so that just, like, amps everything up. And then Michigan in their stadium has had several incidents in that tunnel, not just this Penn State and Michigan, Ohio State and Michigan, other incidents in that little tunnel. And so this comes down to not just Michigan Stadium. The damn conference never even talked about any more actions or how teams enter the tunnel or not. There was nothing. There was nothing at all from the conference. I blame the damn Big Ten for letting this get to this point.
100% agree.
It was a matter of time. It was a matter of time.
I will read the statement from the Big Ten in a moment. I want to get to that in a second. So
yeah.
I'll read that in a moment because I think you're 100% right. I don't care what the players are doing there. Nothing justified what happened to them. So I honestly don't care what the players are doing. What I do care about, DB, is the extra police and the extra security that were hired to stop an incident like this from happening after the Penn State game. Did absolutely nothing.
Who did nothing. They did nothing. You just see them standing there.
If you're talking about a police supervisor or a district attorney, to me, that is as big a problem as anything else.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are having no suspensions, no conversations about that is just ridiculous. And you want to know what, Michigan people? You need to talk about it too, because if you bring in these cops to provide extra security and there's another incident and they don't do anything about it, well, then there you go.
Yeah. And I'm going to say this too, because there's a social justice element to this. I'm sure that most of the police and security down there were white. Okay. And I know what that could look like, but it doesn't have to turn into a Rodney King incident in the tunnel. But it does mean that you get in front of and in between the people that are fighting or getting hit and push the white jerseys back. You don't have to draw your guns. You don't have to draw your clubs. You just get in the middle of them so that they can't get to them anymore right away, instantly, when that stuff was starting. It was building up. It wasn't like it just happened. You could see it building up.
The cops and security had a job to do, and they did not do it. They were standing there.
They didn't do it at all.
They did not do their job, and there has been no explanation as to why. All right.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about
And even more, and I just want to say something else, because I watched the entire – I've never wasted my time in my life watching standalone video, one angle like this, but I watched all these different videos. And that ESPN camera that's just sort of, you know, you really don't see a lot. I mean, you see a bunch of white jerseys standing in front of it, big guys, and you can't see anything after a while. But the one thing that is very odd to me is after all that is happening, the two teams are then proceeding next to one another, going into their locker rooms. What kind of stupid shit is that when a fight just happened? The blue jerseys shouldn't have been anywhere near. There shouldn't have been any kind of that could have got worse, actually. Michigan should have been on the field celebrating. If you got to take a piss, I don't know, then, you know, go piss in your pants or figure it out, all right? You know, there's got to be auxiliary bathrooms somewhere. Go piss in the equipment tunnel or whatever. I don't know. But the point is, it shouldn't have been – they should have been on the field completely – until Michigan State was in their room.
Agreed. 100% agreed. I mean, the whole thing's chicken shit, DB.
Yes, it is chicken shit.
The conference, here's the Big Ten statement. The conference, or part of the Big Ten statement, the conference has concluded that the University of Michigan did not meet the standards of the Big Ten Conference Football Game Management Manual policy. The policy requires the conference member institution game host to provide adequate protection for personnel of both home and visiting teams when entering and leaving playing arenas. Members of both teams did not represent the level of sportsmanship that is expected from the Big Ten Conference and its member institutions. All right. That's the Big Ten. Now, here's what Uncle Ward had to say. Uncle Ward.
Ward Big Ten Manual.
Yes, exactly. Michigan Athletic Director Uncle Ward, on behalf of the University of Michigan and our athletic department, I appreciate the thoroughness with which the Big Ten Conference and Washtenaw County Prosecutor's Office have approached this matter in response to the October 29th football game versus Michigan State University. We remain focused on providing the safest possible game day environment for all participants and attendees, which includes public spaces at Michigan Stadium and around the locker rooms. We accept the Big Ten Conference's findings in full. The conference's reprimand of U of M was in response to a fan making physical contact with the MSU coach, which is wholly unacceptable. The offender was quickly identified and swiftly ejected from the stadium by our event team. In addition, to reduce the possibility of future incidents, we proactively implemented changes ahead of our final home game by increasing security personnel in areas around the playing surface. Security and procedural reviews will remain a constant focal point of future event planning and reviews. What kind of crock of shit is this?
What kind of crock is that? Right, exactly. All right. You let your fans just kind of like linger around the tunnel like that. The only cheap shot operation that does that is Washington Commanders.
Yeah. Well, and the reason they do that is because they've got sewage coming through their roof. But it's...
the fans have to take cover. Not to mention FedEx Field is falling apart, but that's another podcast.
That's another pod. But here's the interesting thing. The Big Ten was very specific. So members of both teams did not represent the level of sportsmanship that is expected.
Yes.
Uncle Ward doesn't talk about that.
No.
Uncle Ward talks about the fan that touched Mel Tucker on the head.
Yeah.
Who are the members of the University of Michigan team, DB, that did not represent the level of sportsmanship that is expected?
Well, that goes back to the question that my dad asked. What were those players doing in the tunnel? They didn't deserve to be beat up, but what were they doing there?
It's remarkable. It's stunning. No reference to the fact that the security that was there, the increased security that was there, didn't do their job. Nothing.
You know, and I will say, and this is a University of Michigan problem too. If you remember, Sajmo, and you can rewind our podcast if you feel like it, back to 2008 or 9. You know what I'm going to talk about. The incident at Yost Arena where Andrew Convoy buried Steve somebody from Michigan's head into the ice. Not very nice. But then the Steve somebody from Michigan's dad went after Convoy in the entire Michigan State locker room under Yost Arena with no security people around at all. Nobody.
It's an extension of the problem, right? The arrogance of the University of Michigan to think that they couldn't possibly do anything wrong. And as a result, everything is the fault of those awful people at Michigan State University.
Yep. To another thing, and this goes beyond just this. We're talking about safety and security of, like, people. human beings, the fans of your own school and your own stadium? Are they really safe in that stadium or in their arenas from God knows what would happen, right, in this day and age?
Look, with the security that Michigan hired, I could rob them. I could go in, walk into Harbaugh's office and walk out with the safe in his office and whatever cash he had in them with the security that got hired for that place.
And his teddy bear.
And his teddy bear. And his extra khaki pants.
He wears my khaki pants.
We could have sworn
that's while walking out of the stadium with a smile on his face and waves at the security camera. Hi, Ann Arbor.
a ring doorbell is probably the extent of security in Ann Arbor these days. Just remarkable.
And, you know, when this stuff came around, M Live wrote some stuff that I never even knew. Do you remember that whole incident on the field at Spartan Stadium where Devin Bush from Michigan? I think that's who it was. Where he started a fight with the Michigan State players at midfield when they were out.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And so Mark D'Antonio and MSU were fined or reprimanded or whatever it was. Maybe not fined, reprimanded. But Jimbo, unbeknownst to me until today, was privately reprimanded by Jim Delaney. And it should have been, it seemed to me, A, publicly stated that he was reprimanded for his comments and things that he was making afterward, for weeks afterward. And there was some alluding to the fact that it was sort of like brushed under the rug.
Hey, bottom line, DB, and Michigan fans do not like to hear this, but there are separate rules for Michigan and Ohio State, and there are rules for everyone else.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you want to
know
what?
I know it. The Big Ten knows it.
Yeah. But, and this goes deeper than that. So the problem, at least not with college basketball as much, but with college football, NCAA, Division I football, is that there is no conference office. There is no, for better or worse, Roger Goodell. There's no suspension of, the conferences are sort of left to do the discipline, and that's a mess. And it's only a matter of time before something worse happens.
Oh, yeah. Something worse is going to happen. There's always going to be something worse.
Yeah. And I am just so surprised. I mean, stop acting like these kids are actually going to class. Like, let's just cut the bullshit. And, you know, this really should be set up like an NFL. And let's chuck the recruiting. Chuck the recruiting and have a draft.
All right. So I agree with you in part of it. So, which is that I'm not going to impugn the kids that are in school and are probably going to class. That doesn't mean they want to go to class, but I'm pretty sure they're going because they get in trouble if they don't.
Yeah.
And I've got friends that have been like compliance officers at like other schools and in charge of studying and making sure these kids do go to class. They might not like it, but they go. That said, look, the problem with college football is that the talent doesn't get paid. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Even with name and likeness, the talent does not get paid. The people that are generating billions of dollars in revenue do not get paid. It's time to pay them.
Yeah.
Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, whatever it is time to pay them. And if you're telling me, well, what about all these other sports, then cut them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, and there are lots of good reasons. I don't want to hear about the squash team. I really don't, because you want to know who plays on the squash team? It's either international students who can afford – it's either international students or it's people from really rich families.
Yeah.
Cut it.
Yeah.
Cut it.
Yep. Yep. No, I agree.
No.
Yep.
But pay the players. They generate the revenue. Give them the money.
You know, 2 years ago, we forget, the NCAA put these kids' lives at risk. And just let them play with the coronavirus going on.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have been playing. There shouldn't have been a season, at least definitely for football, and very much so for any other sport.
Hey, look, it's why we put the podcast on pause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The kids should be paid.
Yeah. And so, and I don't know about you, but, I mean, the recruiting is so unfair. Why don't they just do a draft?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not even the recruiting is unfair, right? Look, so we've got multiple problems, right? The first
mm-hmm.
is that the talent needs to get paid, right?
Yeah.
The second is, what the hell are we doing with, like, 85-man rosters? Go to the NFL, 53. You want to know what a 53-man roster does? It spreads that talent all over the country.
Yeah.
You don't need a draft. Yeah. Just cut the roster sizes down to 53.
Well, that's a good point. Or
right.
At least 60. I'm
no,
okay with 60. Look at a round number. Yeah, right.
Yeah, all right. So, all right.
Yeah.
So you do that. That's the second part. The third part is that almost every team, because there's so much focus placed on the college football playoffs, only 10 to 12 teams really have a shot in a given year of qualifying for it.
Right.
Does
sometimes
that mean
less than
the rest
that.
Of the Yeah, does that mean the rest of the football season is meaningless? I don't think so. But let's take it a step further than that, DB. The beauty of college football is that it's not a national sport. The beauty of college football is it's a regional sport. The beauty of college football is that more teams go 6-6 and 7-5 and 8-3 that have 10-win seasons. And
right.
You have fans of all those teams that are passionate about those teams, that want them to get better, want them to do better, and want nothing more than to beat their rival. This is why college football works. And by making college football all about the playoffs and the national championship, you are taking away what fundamentally makes college football fun and entertaining, which is the pageantry and the spirit and the joy and the animosity and the localness of all of this.
Right.
College football is a lot closer to baseball than it is to the NFL.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I know what happens in the SEC because I love college football. But if I was an average college football fan and I went to Michigan State and I rooted for Michigan State, man, I wouldn't want to care about the SEC. Who cares?
Right.
We don't play them.
Nope.
But now we have to because we're in the college football playoffs.
Right. And no one seems too quick to be changing that. It's still this computerized top four popularity contest that somebody started off, ranked number one by says who before they stepped on the field. And you look at their strength of schedule, and I'm talking to you, Georgia, and I'm talking to you, Michigan.
How about you play someone?
Yeah.
And we're not talking about Michigan State. We know Michigan State's bad. How about you put someone on your non-conference schedule that actually recruits and plays at the same level as you do?
Right. Well, that would require the conferences or some sort of legislative body making the schedule harder, tougher, more interesting, and not allowing everybody to just schedule cupcakes like Alabama scheduling McNeese State in the middle of November.
It would require intestinal fortitude.
Yes.
Something sorely lacking.
And nobody
I'm not sure the corner office in Ann Arbor knows what those words mean.
Well, and for that matter, the NCAA or even the SEC, no one wants to stand up to Nick Saban. I mean, I'm convinced that this whole system right now is set up just to appease him. And when he retires, then somebody will get around to changing it. Seriously, they're afraid of him.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. And it's ridiculous.
It is.
You know. Yeah.
Well, speaking of intestinal.
I'm not going to take away Michigan's win over Ohio State. Good for you. You won. That was a good game. It was a good win for them. Well, it wasn't a good game. But it was a good win for them, and hats off to you. That's a hard place to play, and you did it. But you didn't play anybody else before that, and some of that has to do with the conference.
And some of that has to do with the fact that Khaki Pants knows that he's got a shot at winning the Big Ten championship and doesn't want to take the chance of losing because he's a coward.
Right.
He's a yellow-bellied, chicken-livered coward.
And by the way, I am so actually glad, in a way, because of Michigan and Ohio State, to see USC and UCLA, I believe, still on track to be joining the Big Ten, correct?
Yes.
In 2024? Yes. So, curiously, what do the divisions look like for that? I mean,
I don't think they're
going to
do
USC. What are they doing?
I believe what they're going to do is they're going to protect rivalry games, like three of them, and then they're going to rotate the rest through the schedule. So you're guaranteed to play every team at least once every few years.
All right.
I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that, too. We don't need to be playing that many non-conference games.
Well, what it means is, if you want to know what the effect on scheduling is going to be, it means that in scheduling McNeese State, they'll schedule Central McNeese State, Michigan will.
Right. Right. Well, the SEC is going to have that thing going on, too, because Texas and Oklahoma are coming over there.
Yes. And by the way, the whole cupcake weekend in the SEC, that's got to go. Like, come on.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
All right, let's just choose a weekend in the middle of the year for everyone to have a get-right game before rivalry week. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Stop that nonsense. Your fans don't want to go to those games. They don't want to pay money to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I would love to, you know, just piss all over this Michigan-Ohio State thing and just get rid of it. And make the last few weeks of the conference season more like a big playoff, you know?
I would be for
that. They can still have their game, but move it up a little bit.
I would be for that, but in the end, I think these college rivalries are worth protecting. It's what makes the game the game. College football is a local and a regional sport, and we've ruined it by this nationalization of it.
I want to go just before we move on, because we have a few more subjects to cover. What did you think, and this is the last thing I'm going to say about this Michigan State, Michigan stuff right now, but what did you think about one or two of the columnists, I think, in the Detroit section of life saying something about putting the Michigan State Michigan football game on hold for a couple of years because of the toxicity.
Oh, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Really, yeah. That's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way in the world they're going to do that and risk millions of dollars in revenue.
It goes beyond the there's no way they're going to do that, right? What it does is it doesn't acknowledge the following, right? Is it doesn't acknowledge that, yeah, you want to know what? This is a heated rivalry. This is a heated rivalry. Does it get overheated at times? Yeah. But the goal here is for people to learn their lessons and not repeat it, not to not play the game, right? That's the wrong thing to do here. So first and foremost. Second of all, this is exactly why Michigan State and Michigan don't want this to be a night game in primetime. This is exactly why, you know, Michigan and Michigan State don't want to serve alcoholic football games. And yet there is a press to do all of these things. But no. Well, let's just end the game. Well, no, let's start making it a noon kickoff. Let's lower the temperature. Let's figure out ways to be reasonable. The whole thing is just dumb. And you want to know what? If Michigan had started this fight instead of Michigan State, there would have been no calls to end the rivalry. It would have been like, what lessons can we learn from this?
Yes, right, exactly. Oh, 100%. Yes.
Yeah. The blue wall is real, people. And don't let anyone tell you otherwise. We talked about Khaki Pants' cowardice, his cowardly lion routine earlier. And we talked about, people lacking intestinal fortitude. There's one person that doesn't lack intestinal fortitude, TV. That's Tom Izzo.
Oh, yeah.
Love Tom Izzo. Here's Michigan State's schedule so far. Northern Arizona, win. Playing Gonzaga on a ship. Lost by a point.
Yeah.
Beating Kentucky. Good game.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Kentucky.
Yep.
Great game.
Another good game.
Beating
yep.
Villanova. Very good game. Losing to Alabama. All right. Beating Oregon. And beating a pretty good Portland team. This is before they travel to Notre Dame.
Yep.
TV. Intestinal fortitude. Could you imagine Khaki Pants putting together a schedule like this?
Hell no.
All right. This Michigan State team is a little different than previous Michigan State teams. And they've got some injury problems right now. Malik Hall's out for a few weeks with stress fracture, stress reaction. Jaden Akins hurt himself. He's out of the lineup as well. And by the way, what is it with stress reaction in Michigan State basketball players? I feel like this has been going on for 20 years. Have we not figured out in the last 20 years how not to make this happen?
Yeah. It does happen a lot.
Okay. And so the Alabama loss, no Akins, no Hall. The win over Oregon, no Akins, no Hall. Michigan State, Portland. I mean, look, we got problems here. Because Tom Izzo is doing something different. He's not going with a very deep roster this year. He's not going with 10 players, 12 players. I mean, they go five or six. I mean, they go six deep, maybe seven. Mm-hmm. That's it. And now they're playing players they didn't even want to play at all. And they're hanging in there.
Yeah. Yep.
This is a team that has grit and toughness. I mean, Tyson and Hogard and Hauser and Matty Sissoko. I mean, man, if Matty Sissoko, I mean, he's playing. If he played like this last year, just imagine how good that Michigan State team would have been. making free throws, rebounding, you know, defending without fouling.
Yep.
He was a beast against Kentucky. Holy cow.
Oh, yeah.
Alley-ooping. This is a fun team. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't even know if they're going to reach the NCAA tournament. And honestly, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying watching this team play. It's clear Izzo likes this team. I like this team. They're going to look, they turn the ball over way too much. Hogarth just drives you nuts the way he turns the ball over in his execution at times. And then the time he's just spectacular. And, you know, they Tyson Walker, man, he's funny in shots. But it's just fun.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable. I like this team a lot. I have no idea what's going to happen the rest of the season. I honestly don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just going to enjoy the ride and go from there.
Yeah, no, you're right, 100%. You know, there's no expectations on this team this year, first of all. Second of all, you just identified the difference between college basketball and college football. I mean, look, Alabama beat Michigan State. Now, most people that are basketball fans will go, Alabama? Well, that Alabama team is pretty damn good. They even beat number one North Carolina in four overtimes in that Phil Knight tournament. And so that's how unpredictable but fun and more balanced college basketball is, because, you know, there's no more rat face coaching at Duke. And so now it's kind of like very interesting. You know, you still have Kansas sitting out there, but, you know, it's kind of this like dynamic, like, I don't really know who's going to win. I can't put my finger on it anywhere.
I can't put my finger on it, but I do know one thing.
Nope.
This just in, DB. Purdue's really good.
They are. Yes, they are. They're turning some heads.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, this is one of those years where you just sit back and you're like, let's enjoy the season. I mean, you got Northwestern and Penn State, and you got Brown and Oakland and Buffalo. Then you get Nebraska, Michigan, Wisconsin, Illinois. I mean, you get in Purdue, and Purdue at the Breslin Center, January 16th. This is, I mean, Maryland at the Breslin Center, February 7th. Closing the season out with Ohio State at the Breslin Center for Senior Day.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
I have no idea whether they'll reach the NCAA tournament. I have no idea whether they're going to be over 500, DB. And I really don't care. I just like watching these guys play.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. And, you know, the thing is that I always think Spartan teams, no matter which one it is, football, basketball, whatever, they're always better when they're laying in the weeds than they are with a big ranking, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We embrace that underdog thing.
They do, and this is like the classic Izzo underdog team.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Another team that, you know, seems to have developed intestinal fortitude. the Michigan State hockey team, DB. 11-4-1 overall.
Yes. Well, full disclosure here, Satchel. Until right before the podcast, I had no idea what MSU hockey was doing. I haven't sold my jerseys or anything or buried my paraphernalia, but I stopped paying attention to MSU hockey because of how bad it's been over the last 10, 12 years. And so this was the first time ever where I just said, I'm not going to look. I don't care. And until you brought it up, I said, all right, I'm going to take a peek. And I looked at the Spartan website and I was shocked that they're 11-4 and maybe a tie or two.
Yeah, 11-4-2. They've got So they lost 5-0 to Notre Dame and tied Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
They swept Wisconsin at Mon.
Mm-hmm.
5-0, 5-1. They swept Ohio State at Mon, 4-2, 4-3.
Mm-hmm.
They split with Penn State in Happy Valley. Their win was 7-3. Their loss was 4-3. They swept Miami of Ohio, DB, 5-3 and 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
In Oxford.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what, the next few weekends is going to tell us a lot about Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
They've got Minnesota at home for two games, December 2nd and 3rd. Then December 9th and 10th, they've got one game in East Lansing and one game in Ann Arbor against the University of Michigan.
Yep.
And then after that, they've got Ferris State in the GLI.
The GLI, which, by the way, I saw on the schedule, is at Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids.
I know. That's terrible, isn't it?
I know. I kind of like the campus thing. Move it around to Houghton and Big Rapids or whatever.
Yeah. Go to Knickerbocker Arena in Albany if you want. Just don't do it in Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I mean, and play that tournament when the students are around, you know, like not during the holidays, like the bean pot, they play that when the students are around.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've got this ass backwards. But we are going to learn a lot about Michigan State hockey over the course of the next month.
Yep.
We'll see what happens. All right. Other college news of note. Excuse me. We got a couple new coaches joining the Big Ten, DB.
Uh-huh.
Let's start with Matt Rhule in Nebraska.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so it seemed to me that, you know, I'm not someone who makes predictions about people's livelihoods at the NFL, but I just didn't see Matt Rhule probably lasting very long, and that Carolina job was, you know, like the Nebraska job. I mean, it's the Pitt, right? You know, and so he went from one Pitt to another Pitt, and this is a big lift. The only difference is, though, is he has a little bit of, like, name credential going here to Nebraska. I don't think this is, like, you know, all of a sudden going to bring Nebraska back to dominance. However, might be able to start building Nebraska back into the direction of where they're, you know, more competitive with Wisconsin and whoever else in that division.
So Matt Rhule is a proven program builder, right? He did it at Baylor. I think when he did it at Temple before that, whatever his coaching is. He's been in two or three stops, built great programs each step of the way. Proven program builder. That's what Nebraska needs. They don't need just a coach.
Yeah.
They need a program builder.
Yeah.
And for the – look, I thought Scott Foss was a home run hire. Josh Bo was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's who UNLV is looking at, by the way.
Oh, man. But, yeah, no, I thought Scott Foss was going to be a good hire. I was wrong. I think Matt Rhule's a good hire, but I think what people don't understand about Nebraska is the best thing about Nebraska is the fan base.
Yes.
Outside of the fan base, the school doesn't have much going for it.
No.
I mean, they don't have any local recruiting ground to dominate.
No.
So that's a problem. At least Michigan State can tap into, like, local recruiting ground that's got some players. Nebraska doesn't even have that.
Yeah.
They got to get players from all over the country to come to Nebraska. And you think Michigan State gets people from other parts of the country struggle to come into the cold in East Lansing? Yeah, try getting people to come out to Lincoln.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you're right. Matt Rule's a program builder. So, Cornhusker Nation, I guess, you know, be patient and see what happens. But, you know, I mean, I think at least they're pointed in a better direction than they were yesterday.
Okay. Then, the big news, Luke Frost to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Did not see that coming, DB.
No, I didn't see that coming either. I'm very surprised.
First of all, I think it's a good hire.
It is a good hire. I mean, it actually is a good fit when you think about it. I mean, Wisconsin needed somebody. And Luke Fickell has spent, what, he was at Cincinnati for a good 8-10 years, right?
5 or 6, I think.
Oh, that's right. He was still on Urban Meyer's staff for a while as defensive coordinator. But still, he's cut his teeth as a head coach, you know, which is maybe something that Scott Frost should have thought about a little bit more, maybe. Cut your teeth somewhere.
Well, Scott Frost was at UCF for a few years.
He's at UCF, but... You know, but I mean, Luke Fickell, let me ask you a question. If Mel Tucker, say, never came to Michigan State, would we have been okay with Luke Fickell at Michigan State?
Well, Michigan State was trying to hire Luke Fickell before Tucker.
Yeah.
He was the guy. He's the guy everyone wanted, and he said no because of the Larry Nassar stuff.
Well, okay.
Luke Fickell wanted the Michigan State job. If the Larry Nassar stuff hadn't happened, he would have taken the Michigan State job.
Yeah.
And we would have loved it.
Yeah.
Because the dude can recruit. He's getting pros to play in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, he's going to turn Wisconsin around. And that puts pressure on everybody else.
Yes. It says, nice try, Nebraska. That's what it says.
Well, I mean, Wisconsin, when you think about the jobs in college football and the Big Ten, you know, Wisconsin's a nice, that's a nice one. That's a big one.
Yeah, it's in the top 5, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, you got to figure the top 3 in no particular order are Ohio State, Penn State, and some school in the Detroit area.
Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, that one. And so, I mean, you got to guess those are the 3 best gigs. And then after that, sure, Wisconsin and Michigan State are probably in that next tier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no one wants to coach Iowa or Purdue or Nebraska's got well-documented problems. But I'll tell you what, the Big Ten's just gotten tougher. I mean, you've added 2 solid coaches. These guys are no joke.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we mentioned Purdue. And let's just, you know, focus the camera on Iowa for a second, too. As much as Iowa fans have this love-hate relationship with Kirk Ferentz, I mean, he gets them into the Big Ten championship game, and sometimes, you know, once or twice they won. And, you know, when Wisconsin's not there. And, you know, Purdue somehow, you know, they kind of hung on, and they're – Now, we saw what they did to Michigan State last year, kind of wrecked the season. And, you know, they're not a bad team. You know, this is a pretty nice achievement for them to get to the, you know, they won the games that they needed to.
I will laugh so hard if Purdue beats Michigan
Well, I mean, Spartan Nation will be cheering very heartily for Purdue. I don't know if they can, but it will be interesting.
I don't think they can, but let me tell you why. The mirth and the joy in the Sashville household will know no limits.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The Purdue emerged victorious.
By the way, is Ryan Day headed to the John Cooper zone if he can't beat Michigan pretty soon?
I think he might already be there.
Yeah. I'd say he's going to be looking for a job next year if the same thing happens. Unbelievably. He's only had 5 Big Ten losses.
John Cooper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. John Cooper was trending on Twitter the other day.
Is that right?
Let me tell you what. 50% of the people using Twitter had no idea who John Cooper was until he started trending.
Wow. Wow. Just a real quick comment before we talk about the World Cup. I'm seeing Matt Ryan, the quarterback for the Colts, doing a press conference after the Colts lost this evening to the Steelers. And an aside, Matt Ryan, as a white guy, your hair, something weird going on with the hair, like the sides of his head are shaved and he's got some sort of weird, like it's kind of sticking up, but it's not a mohawk and I don't know what it is. You know, his hair looks like that one brush in the vacuum cleaner set that you don't ever use. Like kind of like that, you know, you never pull it out. It looks like that.
Here's the thing, BB. Once I started shaving my own head, I stopped commenting on other people's hair.
Fair enough. I just want to say to Matt Ryan, if you're listening, which you're not because you're doing this press conference, but if you find this podcast, Matt, can you stop going to Sport Clips? And maybe, you know, I'm sure they got to have a pretty good salon somewhere around Indianapolis. So find it and get yourself a decent hairstyle or do the hair plug thing like Joe Buck.
Just do something.
Yeah, do something.
Speaking of do something, TV.
Yes.
The USA plays in Iraq.
Oh, my.
Tomorrow.
Yes.
In fact,
yes.
As many of you listen to this, you might already know the results of this match. But seeing as we record this and as we broadcast to you live, and for those of you listening to us live, thank you. We appreciate your patronage.
Yes.
We appreciate the fact that you stuck around for this long. I mean, we're an hour and 40 minutes in, so thank you for that as well.
Yeah.
Phone lines are open. I mean, if you want to call in and talk, 323-870-3997. Want to talk a little World Cup. And if you're wondering what our World Cup qualifications are, well, I played competitive soccer growing up, and I covered soccer for USA Today for a while. We got some creds here. And so the USA plays Iran, and they have to win to advance. That's it.
Yes.
That's what they got to do.
Yep.
This game has political overtones. It has.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, win and you're in. How much of the World
Easier
Cup have you been watching?
Easier said than done.
How much of the World Cup have you been watching?
A lot. I've been enjoying it. It's been unpredictable in many ways. How about you?
Yes. Lots of underdogs winning, goals, lots of goals. It's been very enjoyable. I've had a good time from Japan beating Germany to Saudi Arabia beating Argentina. I mean, it's just all sorts of stuff happening. Ghana had an amazing game today. I've had a good time watching, and Spain's been amazing. love watching Spain play. Brazil has been remarkable. It's just been really good. And the games have been fairly exciting. And I think it's been exciting for a few reasons. One is the number of substitutes that are allowed. I mean, they're allowing 5 substitutes now.
Mm-hmm.
That's changed the nature of the game. Substitutes have scored more goals in this World Cup than they have any previous World Cup. They're scoring goals. Subs are just scoring goals at a huge clip. And all these new players coming into the game have made a huge difference. And the managers that understand what these subs can do and get them into the games earlier, those teams are winning. And then the managers that are coaching like they still have 3 subs and bringing them on late in the game, they're the ones that are struggling. Ahem, Greg Berhalter, pay attention. Get your subs into the game early. that's played a factor. Lots of goals played a factor. The other interesting thing is I think people knew that, you know, people were going to be rooting for Qatar. But I think people forgot that a lot of teams in the Middle East and Africa, this is the closest they've ever had a World Cup to their own soil. They're turning out in big numbers. And they're playing inspired ball. And I think people forget about that. I think it's made a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Other than the early sort of ticket debacles that were going on there and the whole Budweiser fiasco, which Budweiser handled that very well, you know, at the end. A little snarky at first, but that was a bit odd, the whole thing. But
What I have a problem with is media coverage of this, right?
Yeah.
Like treating this like the biggest scandal since Watergate. I mean, this is unbelievable. You know, it is permissible to enjoy the game, the beautiful game of soccer, while sober.
Yeah.
I know. Shocking news, isn't it? But you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to have a good time without getting drunk. I know. It's hard to believe, but you're allowed to do that.
And, you know, hey, folks, it's just Budweiser. Not like we banned, you know, the latest Qatari, pale ale.
Get over it, people.
Yeah, Budweiser.
I mean, look, if you're Budweiser, you're mad. I get it. And if you're used to drinking at games, you should be mad for like 30 seconds.
Right.
Right. But this isn't the end of humanity. Have any of the civil rights issues or human rights issues bothered you, made you not want to watch the World Cup? How do you feel about all that?
No, I do understand, though. I mean, as much as we, you know, could sit here for hours and hours and talk about, you know, the problems that we have in our own country here, which are many, you know, there's a lot of, you can't, you know, and some people in Afghanistan, men and women, were flogged for saying things about, you know, the Afghan government, and, you know, just all sorts of things. Signage that you can and cannot wear, pride armbands that you can and cannot wear in Qatar. I wish that everyone was more open to things and more socially just. But I look at it this way, you know, sports sometimes brings people together. And, you know, maybe it helps a little bit, you know, to be able to sit and cheer different teams in different countries, you know. What about you?
So I think two things can be true at once. And I know this is hard for people to believe that two things can be true at once, but it's true, right? One is that the games never should have been awarded to Qatar. You know,
sure.
They won it through bribery. They won the bid through bribery.
Yep.
The games never should have been awarded to Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that the human rights atrocities in Qatar are real and atrocious. And we should be bothered by them. And we should not run away from them. We should shine a very bright light on them. And if this World Cup serves that purpose, then that is fantastic. Because a bright light needs to be shined on this stuff. And the world needs to care about it. And let me tell you what, if the World Cup wasn't here, the world wouldn't be caring about it.
Right.
Bottom line. And so I think we are right to be disturbed. We are right to be upset. And we should feel and accept all of that. I also think that it is also perfectly fine to feel like, you want to know what, after the pandemic and the economy going to tank and inflation and all lockdowns and everything we've been through the last 2 to 3 years, to say, hey, we need a break. We need to come together and celebrate something, not just as a country, but as a global community. And there is nothing like the World Cup. The Olympics don't even come close, TV. The World Cup is it. The entire world's watching. And the entire world is enjoying this brilliant display of sport. And for a month, the world is going to be together as a community. They're going to have fun. They're going to experience joy and brilliance and talking about it and everything that comes along with it, the distraction. And it's okay for that to be very real too. Two things can be true at the same time, right? It's okay to be disturbed by the human rights abuses. And it's also okay to admit that, you want to know what? We need this. And both of those things can be true and are true. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to enjoy the brilliance of the World Cup on the pitch. And off of it, I'm going to make sure that I promote's the wrong word, but I help shine a light on the atrocities, the human rights atrocities that have happened and continue to happen there. I think both can be entirely true. I think this can be a force for good on both fronts, and I think we should embrace both sides of it.
Right. Very well stated.
Thank you.
Yeah.
USA Iran. Oh, by the way, Fox's coverage of the World Cup has been good. And I think part of the reason it's been good, and then we'll get to USA Iran, part of the reason it's been good is the women. The women soccer players who brought a ton to the coverage, right? But in the United States, women soccer players have better name recognition and more credibility than male soccer players. Just do. Because they go to World Cups. They do something the U.S. men's national team cannot do. They get out of group stage. They go into the knockaround. They win there. They go to the semifinals. They go to the finals. This is stuff that the U.S. men's soccer team just can only dream of doing.
Right.
Because they don't have, you know, these amazing, well-funded professional leagues to play in and don't earn salaries, they take their broadcasting seriously. And so what you end up getting is you end up getting really good coverage from a really diverse group of people. And it's been, quite frankly, really enjoyable. And it's the... Allie Wagner is one of them, so she's just terrific. And they've got some women in from Britain, played on British national teams there, and in World Cups there. The women reporters, the women announcers, have brought depth and flavor and to the coverage at Fox. That's just been fantastic, and I've really enjoyed the coverage.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, I still love going over to Telemundo and hearing Goal. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And Kate Abdo has done a great job in her role. I mean, it's just been terrific. But yeah, Telemundo's fun. I love Telemundo.
Yeah.
And so, and the Goal calls have been terrific there. They always are. All right, yeah. USA Iran, what are you expecting, DB? What is the big DB prediction on USA Iran?
Ooh, well, this is hard because Iran is a good team. And, you know, the average soccer fan, you know, knows that. I don't know that the less than average soccer fan knows that. They just think, oh, Iran, well, you know, the United States is going to walk over. But the United States, they've only scored one goal. And so they're a bit offensively challenged. And so I think Iran's going to, they're really going to play tight defense and make the U.S. work. And I sense a tie coming. I sense a draw coming. That's not it. And that won't work.
Iran needs a draw to advance. That's it.
Yeah. And I think that's what's going to happen. And, you know, what say you?
This is what I say.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough... The tough get going! Who's with me? Let's go! Come on!
So that's going to be Greg Berhalter's halftime speech to the kids.
When
they tied nil-nil.
Oh, the nil-nil tie, DB, is the most reasonable prediction of all time. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And yet, I just think the U.S. is going to find a way to score a goal. They're going to dig deep, and they're going to throw numbers at it, and they're going to find a way to... They're going to find a way to sneak one in and win 1-0. That's what I think. But it's tough because you're right. This is an offensively challenged team. It is a team that struggles to finish. It is a team that's capable, but they don't have that big magic goal scorer. They just don't. And it's weird because you're watching all these games and watching all these teams score these goals with like clinical precision. And then you've got Team USA.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like it's just frustrating. It really is. I believe we will win this game.
Well, that would be amazing if they can advance at least, considering, you know, the recent USA men's soccer teams haven't done well.
And if Greg Berhalter waits till the 70th minute to make his first substitution, my screen might have a hole in it.
Yeah, that can't happen.
Just.
Yeah.
It would be bad, DB. Especially considering the rate at which substitutes are scoring goals. And especially considering we've got subs to put in the game for like the first time. This is actually, and we can end on this one, this is actually a really good and talented U.S. team. Just from a skill level, this is the most skillful team the United States has ever fielded.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the tie against England, you know, the draw, if you will, was great. it would have landed better if the United States had come up with the victory against Wales, but they didn't. And so, you know, here they are. And, yeah, they're going to have to dig deep and find that way. The United States is the TCU of the World Cup.
I love the analogy. The TCU of the World Cup. That is perfect.
I have to say, by the way, I'm just going backwards for a second. TCU, Satchmo, watched them play a few times this year, particularly that Texas game. They remind me of some of the D'Antonio MSU teams.
Yes.
Maybe not the flashiest offense, but they make plays when they need to, and their defense comes up with stops. And I'm rooting hard for them over everybody else. I'm curious to see what might happen.
I tell you what, the TCU National Championship would tickle my funny bone.
Oh, yes. I would love it.
Oh, that would be great. Well, that note, let us root for USA to beat Iran, get out of group stage. Let us root for TCU to win the national championship, because I think that would be outstanding.
Yeah.
And we will come back at you soon, because we need to delve into hockey some more and devote some time to that. And we haven't really talked about the women's soccer team and their achievements this year. So we need to talk some about that as well. All right.
Certainly.
Until then, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.